It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters in the 10 o'clock hour. Wes Moss, your host here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11. The number here in the studio. So your financial questions, we've been really going through, I think, the same, some sort of iteration of folks that are nervous about getting invested in this market, because it's at a point where you look at the Dow that bottomed in the 6,000 range, 7, 8, and we've climbed so far from that trough that happened in 2009, and we've gone through 19 and 20 and 21 and hit 22,000 not long ago, and we were hovering around those levels today, and you get new money, or you have some sort of investment, you end up in this investment conundrum. You say, well, do I put money to work today? Because it's not a good idea, Wes, right, to put money to work at a market high. We did an economic history lesson in the last couple of weeks and talking about even bad timing for stocks. Even if you get to work right away, and this is what I wrote about for the AJC that'll be out on Tuesday in the front of the living section, even if you have really bad timing as an investor, it still beats sitting around in cash as long as you've got 5 years, seven. Of course, longer is better. And the study that we've gone through over the last couple of weeks is an indication of looking at 5 year and seven and eight and 15 and 17 and 25 year periods. Of course, the 25 year period handily, it crushes cash, even if you have bad timing. But even shorter periods of time, and I look at short as an investor, I'd say that's 5 years. You think, oh, what's short term? Well, next week. I say short term. When somebody says short term to me, I think 5 years is still short term. Over time, that if you've got a little bit of time in markets, equity markets will trump cash when given time, as long as our economy continues to grow. And I don't see any reason why it's not going to grow over the next 10 and 20 and 30 years. And that's what's so important. And that's why I focus so often on economic data, because I'm really watching to see whether we're going to continue to grow, what demographics look like, are we going to head into a recession? And if we're going to head into a recession, how significant is it going to be? That's really what's the underpinning of how companies are, whether companies earn money or lose money. And that's what drives stock prices. So that's why very often the focus here on Money Matters is an economic focus. With that, the number here in the studio. So 404-872-0750, your calls and questions, whether it relates back to a specific investment or a product you're thinking about committing money to, and maybe you're a little nervous about committing money to. Is there a downside to what you're thinking? I don't know. Maybe let's call Wes and see what he says. Is there something that you're missing when you're about ready to make a decision? Is there a major rule, or is there something you're maybe overlooking? Are you getting sold something that sounds amazing, sounds perfect, but maybe it's not? And it has to do with committing your capital to it. And I'm here just to give you a second opinion and see if it's a good idea or not. And maybe it really goes back to just being an income investor. It's like, Wes, hey, listen, interest rates are really low. The 10-year treasury yield's only 2.2%. Where do I find any income or interest distributions? Where do I find that 3% or 3.5% or 4% a year in cash flow, predictable cash flow from my investments? And these are all the scenarios that we are happy to help with. Whether you take a pension, a monthly pension amount, or a lump sum, maybe your company say, hey, look, you have to leave sooner than you thought, 55 versus you thought you'd be here till you're 60. But when you're out the door, we're gonna give you a lump sum of money or a pension, a monthly amount. You've gotta choose. Big, tough decisions, and happy to walk you through some of the math and some of the major variables that you really have to think about when it comes to making these decisions. That's what we'll do here on Money Matters on a Sunday morning. So good morning. Welcome to the show. Again, your host, Wes Moss. Phone lines open 404-872-0750. 1-800-770-7050 is the number in the studio for your calls and questions. We'll try to set you out. Maybe it's not the perfect answer, but at least set you on the right path. Again, the number in the studio, 404. Give us a call, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. We'll go to Richard, who joins us from Griffin. Richard, good morning. Welcome to the show. What's going on? How can I help?
Well, about 10 years ago, I was looking to do some investing, and a person directed me to land, and I bought a lot, empty lot, and I bought it under the 1031 tax shelter.
Got it. So you were selling something else, some sort of other real estate, and ended up doing a like-kind exchange into another property.
No, I wasn't selling anything. I had cash, and I wanted to put the cash to what I thought would be a better effort.
And, got it.
And so I bought this lot and did the 1031. And my question now is it's still an empty lot. It has appreciated considerably because it's a lake lot. And how do I get rid of it?
Well, is it purchased then? It's not retirement money, correct? It's not in an IRA. This is after-tax money.
Yeah.
But you bought it in a 1031 exchange? See, that's what I'm not quite understanding, because usually a 1031 means that you had real estate money, you made a profit on it, and in order to avoid the taxes, you were able to do a 1031 exchange into another property, effectively, and you defer the taxes until you sell this new piece of property. What you're telling me is that there was some sort of 1031 fund set up, and you just put your original money went into a 1031 fund, it sounds like?
No, that's what I'm trying to figure out. This was a realtor, and he said to me, oh, man, he says, you need to buy this under the 1031. And I said, oh, okay, whatever. And so it was just pure cash.
What kind of property are we looking at here? So it's an investment piece of land.
It's investment.
You put how much into it? $50,000?
No, $150,000.
$150,000? What's it worth today?
What's it what?
What is the value, do you think, today?
Oh, about $300,000.
So it's, wow, okay. And yeah. So you don't want to build on it. You'd rather just sell it and take the cash?
Yeah.
Take the money and run?
And the question is, do I have to buy another empty lot? Or can I buy a lot with a house on it?
Well, I mean, if you want to avoid the taxes, then from my experience in this, and I'm not completely understanding how you put money into this to begin with, but...
Well, I probably not either.
Yeah, I mean, that usually, let's just say you'd bought this, what you would typically do if you're trying to avoid or defer paying that $150,000 in capital gain that you have. You bought it for $150,000, it's worth $300,000, let's call it a $150,000 capital gain. You would then do a 1031 once you sold it. You take the proceeds and you buy another like-kind property. And you'd have to use a 1031 intermediary that will effectively, they broker the deal or help you broker the deal. And that money goes directly in another property, and that way you continue to have it invested in another sort of property. Go ahead.
How stringent is the like-kind property?
It is. It's not. Again, I think that's more of an opinion. I mean, if you're a 1031 intermediary and that's what you do for a living, they're going to give you how far you can stretch that like-kind property, right?
Yeah.
So, is it an office building and it's going to go into an apartment building, but in the apartment, there's also offices. So obviously it's a really good question. I mean, what is the perfect like kind that the IRS doesn't disallow? That gets really specific and you really have to talk to a 1031 exchange real estate specialist to figure out what would be like kind in your case.
Nice.
But it sounds like to me, that if you didn't have a lawyer and you didn't set this up specifically through an intermediary, I don't really know how it would have originated as a 1031, but maybe it did. Maybe it did. Maybe there's something that it would seem to me that'd be fairly rare. But again, there's the world of finance is almost an infinite pattern of uniqueness. So it could very well have been the case. But it sounds like really what's important moving forward here, you got to find another piece of property that fits and continue to invest the money. Otherwise, if you take it out and you put it into, let's say, a mutual fund or stocks or bonds or anything, you're going to pay your full capital gain rate, which, by the way, may not be as high as you think. Depending on your income bracket, the long-term capital gain rate is pretty, there's a lot to that rate. It's, if you're in the 15% tax bracket or lower, it's actually zero. Richard, if you get above the 15% bracket, then it's going to jump up to 20.
Well, I just retired, so my income went in the bucket.
Okay, so you're going to be at a lower capital gain rate. It might be 15%. It's probably 15% for you. It can go up to 20, and then if you have a really high income, you can get a surcharge on top of that of another 3.8%. So there's a lot to the long-term capital gain rate. And when you do make a transaction like this, it does impact your overall adjusted gross income. So it actually, your rate is variable throughout your tax return. So it's a relatively complicated scenario, and you've got to get a tax projection in order to figure out what your rate would be. So this is where you go to a CPA, you sit down, you give them all the parameters, and you say, well, if I sold this thing and didn't do a 1031, what would my tax liability be? And we can easily figure that out. Or a CPA firm running a tax projection, like a mock tax return for you, will easily be able to figure that out. If the tax numbers come back high and you want to continue to leave that asset in real estate, you're going to have to do a 1031, from what you're telling me. And you're going to have to go to a 1031 intermediary specialist in order to do that. But that would be, I would first, if it were me, I'd sit down and figure out my potential tax liability first, Richard, to see if it's even worth going through doing a 1031, because maybe, just maybe, you don't want to keep that money totally tied up in real estate. But we'll see. Wonderful call. Loved it. Hopefully that was helpful, Richard. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750. We'll continue to go to the phones. We still need to talk about valuation in markets. Is it the odometer level that's important, or what we pay for the odometer level? You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning, News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. We're going to go right back to the phones here. Sharon joins us from Atlanta. Sharon, good morning. What's going on? How can I help?
I've recently gotten one of those severance packages from my company, and I'm 59 and a half. So my husband is 63 and thinking about retiring in the next 6 months. So I was a little curious about being able to, I have $30,000 in an IRA with that company at the moment. So am I understanding correctly that I can take that money out, have to pay taxes, but no penalty?
It sounds like that. If you are already 59 and a half, correct. You have full access now to your 401k money or your IRA without having to pay any sort of penalty. So it's free and clear. Now you're going to have to pay ordinary income tax when you pull money out, but it sounds like if you're already 59 and a half, you're definitely past the penalty phase. Oh, let me ask you this. Did you say, what is it in though? Is it in company stock or mutual funds?
It's company.
Company stock?
Yeah.
Okay. And have you held it for a long time, or is it only recently that you have the stock?
It's only this. $30,000 is only what I've done through the company 401k.
But over
in the
over
last couple
fair,
of years.
Okay, so it's been, you know, there's an interesting rule. It's called the rule of net unrealized appreciation. There's a nuance. If you have actual company stock, and there are $400 billion plus of individuals that own their own company stock inside a 401k. And the rules can be a little bit different for actual company stock. And I'll get to that. I've got to run to a quick break, Sharon, but I want to come back and answer the two differences between that and see how you can access these funds. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, right here from News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Straight back into a question we had earlier. Let's see, where were we? We were with... Man, we have so many great questions here. Oh, here we go. We are Sharon. Sharon, are you still with me?
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, we're back from news, weather, traffic. We're going to try to wrap this question up for you. But again, I think that, so you have company stock inside your 401k, correct? It's not a mutual fund. It's actual stock.
I think it's a combination.
Okay.
I've been buying company stock plus other stocks.
Got it. The bottom line is this. If you're 59 and a half, Sharon, you can access that money when you need it. You don't have to start taking it until you're 70 and a half. That's when you have to do required minimum distributions. When you pull money out of a 401k, 90% of the time, you're just dealing with ordinary income. You pull out 10 grand from the 401k, or if you roll it into an IRA, there's no taxes to get it into an IRA. But when you pull it out of a retirement account, IRA or 401k, you can just pay ordinary income taxes. Now, you don't have to pay FICA anymore. And your tax rate in retirement will probably be lower than when you're working. But it's going to be $10,000 worth of income, and it adds to whatever your other income sources are. The one nuance, if you have company stock, You can look at it a slightly different way. The rule of net unrealized appreciation allows you to take the basis, what you paid for the stock effectively, and pay ordinary income on that basis. But when you sell the stock, if you've pulled this out of an IRA, you pay long-term capital gain on what you made on the stock. So if you're somebody that had, you put $10,000 into your company stock, and this might not be your case because it sounds like it's only been a few years, but let's say you've been with IBM or AT&T for 30 years and you have stock at a $20 basis and today it's worth $100, then it may be advantageous to look at it and say, well, I'll pay ordinary income on the basis of my stock at $20. And I'll pull the stock out and then just pay long-term capital gain when I sell the stock on that $80 gain. That's using this rule of net unrealized appreciation, or the NUA rule, which really only applies to somebody that has their own company stock inside a 401k plan. Interesting. A lot of great calls here today. 404-872-0750. We're going to try to get back to the phones in a minute. If you want to find me and the Money Matters team, easy to do so, by the way. We're right here in Atlanta. Offices in Atlanta, offices in Tampa, offices on the West Coast, actually, near San Diego. So we're available, happy to talk with you, phone or in person. You can find me and the team at wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Contact button upper right-hand corner. Those emails come straight to me. Now, with that, let's look at this. I want to talk about valuation for a minute. Again, super quick recap. We talked about the last couple of weeks that effectively being in the market over time, even if you have bad timing in stocks, if you have time, still beats cash. So I looked at 25, 17, 15, 8, 5-year periods. In every case, even the worst timing you could have buying into stock still beat cash, or still best cash, if you will. Over 25 years, even the bad timing beats cash by 381%. Over 17 years, bad timing beats cash by 80%. Even staring into the abyss before the financial crisis, if you got invested in that period of time, which would be terrible timing, Your stock market return, S&P 500, still beats cash by 54%. So you get that. But it is important to understand that paying, or historically paying less for stock earnings, paying $10 for a dollar of earnings versus $30 for a dollar of earnings, leads to better results over time. So yes, time is the most important matter in investing. And in a perfect world, we'd only get invested when market valuations are low, but we don't have that luxury because market valuations can stay slightly elevated for years and years and years. So I want to walk through why valuation, though, which is expressed, if we're going to really be talking right now about price to earnings ratio. Why PE, price divided by earnings, why that matters. And I'm going to plug that into the bigger picture. What is PE? In the simplest form, it's just the market's level, so the price of the S&P 500 in this case, or a stock's price, depending on what you're measuring. You can get PE for the whole market or an individual company, divided by a dollar number. And that dollar number is earnings. So expected earnings over the next year, $135 for the S&P 500. The S&P 500 level is roughly 2,400. You divide 2,400 by 135 and you get 17.75. Let's call it 18. So think of it in odometer terms. 2,400 is the odometer's level. 18 is what we're paying for that odometer level. The number 18, the price we are paying for that odometer reading or level is really the key. So price to earnings, or PE, is essentially what we're paying for every dollar of earnings. And that's really what's important as an investor. And historically, when valuations are low, we're better off as investors getting into stocks. Well, why? Well, because that means stocks are cheaper. They're less expensive relative to what they're earning. And cheaper is the operative word. Another way to look at this is to consider how much you're paying. Again, how much are you really paying for earnings? If we're paying $10 or $15 or $30 per dollar, the lower number historically is better. And I went back again to our friends at the Ned Davis Research Group, effectively a stock market history think tank, data think tank, and analyzed forward stock market returns when you get invested at different valuation levels. I wanted to see, well, what do you do over the next year on average when the PE ratio is high versus intermediate or middle range versus low? Here's what I found. Let's take a look at the data, the various odometer levels relative to what we pay. And then what do we earn over the next year? So let's think of it as the sticker price. So that's our sticker price. Is I'm going to just pay what the, let's call it suggested retail value. There's a sticker price on the car. So sticker price is just the retail value. So you can pay that price, sticker price, or you can pay below sticker price, or you pay above sticker price. So let's think of it to some extent as a car analogy. So let's think of it as stocks. Let's start with stocks are on sale. Call this below sticker price. When valuations are low, and this is in the range of 9.5 times or lower. So I'm paying 9.5 times for earnings or less than that. It could be 8, it could be 7. My expected returns are really, really high. So to the tune of on average 20% per year rate of return in markets when I'm paying below sticker price. And that makes sense because you're getting good value. When stocks are at sticker price, let's call them fairly valued or fully valued or appropriately valued, the PE ratio, price to earnings, now that's in a range of 9.5 to 16.5 times, expected returns come in at around 5% a year. So okay returns, not great, okay returns. When I pay above sticker price, and in this scenario, valuations are let's say 16.5 or more, meaning that PE ratio is high, returns over the next year, relatively flat. Historically, they're not negative, they're just flat. Incidentally, that's where we are today. We're just north of sticker price levels. We're at around 18. So while today's market is at a historically high level, what really matters, or that the level matters less than what we're paying for that level. So back to this analogy, we're paying a bit more for the odometer level these days than we'd like to see. Not tremendously more, just a bit more. And an important point to remember is that we don't stay at any of these three ranges listed that I just talked about. We don't stay there forever. We move in and out of these categories as the market changes and the market shifts. So valuations, yes, they matter. But what also matters, of course, is spending time throughout all those three categories. Think about it. To control your point of entry and only be in markets when valuations are in a low point, you'd have to time the market perfectly, and not just once, but you'd have to do it over and over and over again. And we know that's a really difficult game. It's almost an impossible game. It's almost impossible to foretell the market and to control valuations and your entry point. That's difficult. But your own discipline and your own participation, that's a lot easier to control because that's up to you. So just remember that investing success is less about perfection. And it's more about participation. It's less about perfection and more about participation. And if we can remember anything, so today we're at 17, 18 times earnings, a little in that above sticker price range, not tremendously though. Go back into some of the market peaks though. Look at 1998. The market's traded at 30 times earnings, almost double as expensive as where we are today. The year 2000, we traded at 36 and a half times earnings, more than double the valuation where we are today. In 2007, the market multiple got to 24 times earnings. So even though we're a little elevated today, slightly above sticker price, there are historically, you go back to what set up big market corrections, valuations were much, much more stretched than where they are today. So at 30 and 36 and a half and 24, those were the previous market peaks, 98, the year 2000, 07. All of those periods of time, right after the market peaked at this giant overprice, way over sticker price, that's when we got 20% and almost 50% corrections. I think we put all this into context. Remember, markets are not cheap today, so we're not getting a great value. So we don't expect 20% returns like we would if we were buying at 9.5 times. We're at 18 times earnings, which over the next year, about $135 for the S&P 500. So all that to say, we're fully valued to slightly overvalued. It's not the perfect time to invest, likely. But it's also not a terrible time to invest. If you go back to history, valuations can be a lot more out of line, i.e. 08, 2000, 2007, than where we find ourselves today. Good morning. You're listening to Money Matters. We're going to go run to a quick news weather traffic. And then we're back right here with more Money Matters. With me, Wes Moss. Find me and the Money Matters team. Easy to do so. WesMoss.com. WesMoss.com. A contact button upper right-hand corner, those emails and questions. If you have questions about your own particular situation or want to talk with the team, easy to find us. Those emails come straight to me. You're listening to News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. I think we have time for maybe one more question. Let's go to the phones here. Susie joins us from Kennesaw. Susie, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you this morning?
Good. Good morning. So you have, tell me your question. We don't have a lot of time, so hopefully I can help.
All right. Thank you. I'll make it quick. I had a 401k account that I left a company, and I went with another one, and I rolled it over to like a custodial type IRA account with this brokerage firm that I'm with. Mm-hmm. And my question is, now that I have a 401k again, would it be smart to roll it into my self-directed IRA that's the custodial account, move that over into the 401k, because then I would have an ability to borrow the money for a down payment for a home as opposed to withdrawing and having to pay tax on it?
Got it. So you were at an employer, you had a 401k, you rolled into an IRA, and now you're with another employer that has a 401k, and because we can't access our 401k, how old are you, by the way, Susie?
62.
Okay, so you could access your IRA money, but you're still going to pay taxes in order to do so, if you wanted to use it for a down payment on a house. But
right.
Yeah, so you're thinking, well, wait a minute, I'm going to take my regular self-directed IRA, and then just get it into the 401k, and then it's under the 401k rules, which are a little different. And in your case, you should be able to take a loan from the 401k and use that as a down payment.
Right.
How do you think you're going to be working for a fair amount of years and be able to have some time to pay that money back?
Well, that's a good question, because, I mean, I am going to be working probably. I'm going to try to work from 70. But, you know, who knows? I'm in good health, but who knows what will happen. But that's the plan.
How big of a down payment are we talking about? How much would you like to take out of it in order to use for down payment?
I would like to take about $40,000 out.
Got it. So you're right. It would be nice to not have to pay taxes. If you're already working, you're already a pretty high tax bracket, then you pull another $40,000 out of your IRA. Now you're in a really high tax bracket and a big chunk of that gets taken away.
Yeah.
But then you don't want to do it unless you're going to have time at the employer to systematically pay it back. And
okay.
So it is a really good idea to do that. That way you avoid your increasing your taxes too much. I would probably lean towards the 401k, roll the IRA back into the 401k and take the loan. Or it's not an all or nothing proposition. Remember that, Susie. You could take a portion of that IRA, roll a big chunk of the IRA into a 401k, and then you could distribute. Let's say you leave $20,000 in the IRA and just distribute $20,000, so you only increase your adjusted gross income by $20,000. So you don't have to think of it as an all or nothing proposition.
Right.
But I do like the fact that you're going to be able to utilize the 401k rules to take a loan to reduce how much you're going to increase your adjusted gross income. Susie, thanks for the call. Have a wonderful rest of the Sunday. We've got to do a quick prize pack. Okay, so third caller, 404-741-0750, the prize line, WSB Weekend Prize Pack. A pair of tickets to see the Scott Brothers. Actually, it's the Scott Brothers House Party, starring Jonathan and Drew Scott of HGTV's Property Brothers, September 19th at the Cobb Energy Center. Third caller, 404-741-0750. What a fun morning. We talked valuations, market odometer level. It's not so much about the level. It's about what we're paying for earnings at that level. This Tuesday, Living Section, we're pick up a copy of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I have an article in there about time, good timing versus bad timing in the markets, important economic history lesson that you'll hopefully love. And if you want to find me and the Money Matters team, easy to do so, WesMoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Those emails, upper right-hand side, they come straight to me and the team. Happy to help throughout the week. Enjoy this rest of this beautiful Sunday right here, News 95.5, AM 750, WSB.